You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English, and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a collected work by Rudolf Steiner, number 314, entitled Physiology and Healing, Treatment, Therapy, and Hygiene. And this is Lecture 11 of the third part. This book has a number of sections in it. Given in Dornach on the 1st of January, 1924. I have just heard that some confusion has arisen because I spoke of treatment with mercury on the one hand and then of another preparation yesterday. The point is that the mercury treatment was merely given as a specifically effective one, but it has its dangers and can be avoided. Yesterday I thought I had spoken of the heart's milk vetch root preparation as something that fully takes the place of mercury. Let me go straight to the question on the old list. We'll still have one more session tomorrow. The new questions include one, I think, that relates to our present subject. How can we understand the effectiveness of salvarsan in treating syphilis? Above all, we must describe this effectiveness in more detail. With treatments like this, you may always have a degree of success, but you also get harmful side effects. It is simply unthinkable to speak of rational treatment with salvarsan, for the preparation, at least the way it is described, is such that it tears the human bodies apart, tears people apart. Nothing really fits. It may be possible to introduce whatever we want into the body, and there may always be a positive result, but it is impossible to say what will come after that. Undoubtedly so with salvarsan, because things are contradictory. We are, therefore, only able to say, salvarsan therapy is very much the outcome of present-day thinking. Essentially, the situation is such that one cannot give it serious consideration. Perhaps one of you would wish to say something more about this. And now Dr. Rauscher speaks. Would this then also apply to the whole of modern metal therapy, including bismuth therapy? Dr. Steiner. You know, bismuth therapy is wholly comprehensible from our point of view. It is discussed in my courses. But salvarsan is not fully comprehensible. It tears the body apart. There may, of course, be bismuth preparations which do the same if combined with other preparations. But the mode of action of bismuth should be evident from our courses. Now, Dr. Knoll, can an antimony preparation be effective in treating syphilis? Dr. Steiner again. Antimony has its sphere of action between the sexual and respiratory tracts. Everything in the human organization that lies between these two tracts can be covered by antimony. The rest, of course, only in so far as the action of a tract radiates out into the organism as a whole. But it is not really possible to treat anything that is wrong in the sexual tract specifically with antimony. Sequels of syphilitic conditions can be treated very well with antimony. But treating syphilis with antimony from the beginning will definitely not give a complete cure. Antimony relates wholly to the middle organization in the human being, the whole digestive tract, the transition from digestive tract to bloodstream, and of course also the part of the circulatory system which then continues on to the sexual organs. It is, however, distinctly limited to this tract. Dr. Kaser. The bad effect of salvarsan is sufficiently evident from the fatalities. Dr. Steiner again. The greatest probability is this. Salvarsan has been used, and not that long ago. The bad effects, in their culmination, will be evident in 5 to 10 years, perhaps also a period of 7. Unfortunately, no case records are produced today. It is, after all, much, much more important for gaining insight in medicine that case records continue beyond the cure. This will profit us much more than a study of the internal condition of the organism prior to the disease. This may be most important on occasion, but their external things are generally particularly of particular importance in most cases. This is where I must again and again refer to such cases. Our friend Dr. Hawkinson brought a patient to me in Oslo. The man had inexplicable skin eruptions. He was about 45 when he was brought to me, and in everyday medical terms, presented with symptoms that could not possibly be said to hang together. You see, purely taking this further in terms of the organism, you simply cannot find a plausible cause. Physicians are, of course, largely dependent on what patients tell them. I was able to tell the patient straight off, I'll leave out things that are less relevant, quote, "You must have been poisoned in some way when you were between 8, 10, or 11 years old," close quote. Gradually, it emerged that the man, then 45 years of age, had been thirsty one day at school. There happened to be a laboratory next to his classroom with a weak solution of hydrochloric acid on the windowsill. He drank this to quench his thirst, and the problem he had at age 45 went back to that poisoning. To understand an illness, we must look to this external cause as the most important thing. But afterward, we really must carefully continue to observe the organism after recovery to see what brings about recovery. And this would be particularly important with salvarsan treatments. Here you clearly will not be able to apply what I said yesterday for the treatment of syphilis altogether. I referred to a kind of meditative treatment to follow, using abstract concepts which have to be done at different speeds, increasing the speed and then reducing it again, and most conscientiously. This will allow us to make psychic follow-up treatment, which will take years, however, bear fruit with syphilis, if it has been cured in the way I stated yesterday. This kind of psychic treatment would also be an advantage with the mercury treatment, which I do not, however, recommend. Doing such follow-up treatment with salvarsan, you will probably, at a later stage in life, get something we can't say is dementia praecox, but something very similar to dementia praecox later on in life. Mercury treatment with non-psychic follow-up will result in psychiatric phenomena because of the things I mentioned yesterday. But because of the tearing apart, it will be found that a kind of schizophrenia will follow salvarsan treatment, especially if you attempt follow-up treatment in terms of the psyche. And now a Dr. Palmer. It would be very interesting to hear your views on tertiary syphilis and iodine treatment. Dr. Steiner again. As to what can be said about this, the important point is that with a highly generalized condition such as syphilis, we are dealing in the first place with the actual focus of the disease and anything that emanates from it. And then, however, because syphilis affects the whole human being, reaching up as far as the capital I organization, we are dealing with a counter-image in the neurosensory human being. Schematically, it is reasonable to say that the disease is located in the human being of metabolism and limbs, and has its counter-image in the neurosensory human being, including also the laryngeal tract, for example, everything connected with the differentiating upper respiratory function. These two things are intimately connected. With mercury, we act on the actual source and its emanations. With the iodine preparation, we influence the upper part. Polar phenomena in the nerves and senses can be paralyzed by iodine during mercury treatment. So that is the connection. Yesterday, as you'll recall, I spoke mainly of two parts of the whole of syphilis treatment. The first is injecting the preparation. The second is the bath treatment to drive out any excess. This corresponds in a much more natural, rational sense, just as mercury and iodine do. So that is the idea. It is altogether the case that treatment generally takes us to treating the two polar opposite organizations so as to balance them out. Now a Dr. Palmer. The gumas would therefore have to be seen as sequels to excessive mercury. Dr. Steiner again. Yes, very definitely so. Are there any more questions relating to this? Now a Dr. Kaser. How does arsenic act? Dr. Steiner again. Generally speaking, the action of arsenic is essentially to energize the human astral body. That is the basic phenomenon of arsenic action. Arsenic and also its compounds act so powerfully on human beings that we may say it energizes the astral body. If you use arsenic, especially in fluid form, simply as Ronsenyo or Levico water in suitable dosage, you will always get a response when there is need to stimulate the astral body to produce the impulses which are natural to it. Readers aside, I don't know this word, R-O-N-C-E-G-N-O, Ronsenyo maybe, and it's also called Levico water, L-E-V-I-C-O. End of readers aside. With every disease of this kind, by the way, with syphilis and also other venereal disease, a defect in the astral body is either cause or consequence. It is quite natural for arsenic to have an observable effect in that case, but it would not necessarily cure. It does not go deep enough for us to speak of a cure. Now a question from Dr., and there's no name. Is the situation different for a child with congenital syphilis? Dr. Steiner again. You mean hereditary syphilis? In children, the situation is, of course, completely different. And if you are able to make the diagnosis in good time, you will get somewhere, especially with arsenic, but not with selvarsen. Use the arsenic in its greater dilution, and perhaps with added lactic acid or similar, to have it act far enough ahead in the body. In this way, you'll be able to get very good results, especially in children. For congenital syphilis is not really a syphilis. It differs from syphilis in that among the levels of the human organization, particularly in adults, syphilis due to infection acts mainly on the etheric body. The inherited form enters only into the physical body and is not present in the etheric body. By strongly stimulating the astral body with arsenic, you can transfer that to the etheric body and then combat it in an entirely rational way in the physical body. The problem with congenital syphilis is that one has thoroughly ruined an element which is so difficult to access with substances from the earth. Here we must consider the element which I spoke of in the general lecture, showing it to be subject to the peripheral forces. If you altogether want to have any kind of influence on such deformation and degeneration, damage altogether connected with peripheral forces, you must also find a way of setting etheric powers in motion. Now, this milk vetch of which I spoke yesterday has the peculiarity that it has hardened, cornified, and therefore does not really have forces that are still etheric flashing around it. If you then obtain these etheric forces in the sap of its own flowers and leaves, the resulting preparation will be as I described it yesterday. This leads to rational thinking on the subject. Now a question from Dr. Palmer. Further question about tertiary syphilis. Dr. Steiner again. Concerning tertiary syphilis, one can only say that to be truly rational, one can only endeavor to stop it developing, seeking to deal with syphilis in its first stage. Once it has become secondary or tertiary, the syndrome is very complicated from the occult point of view and need not be the same for any two patients. It only looks similar from outside. Inwardly, it need not be the same. It is therefore extremely difficult to deal with, for you cure it at one end and it breaks out in the opposite sense at the other end. If one has to take a position with reference to this, one can only say that secondary syphilis must, of course, be treated in the way I said yesterday, with tertiary syphilis. One may on occasion still get a cure, but it will always be problematical. And again, a question from Dr. Palmer. Concerning glaucoma process, ear process, The glaucoma process is considered to be a kind of tumor process. Ear processes are purulent processes, inflammatory processes. And ear development must be considered to be a tumor development process. Is the polar opposition represented on the one hand by glaucoma and on the other by otitis? Rudolf Steiner again. Surely that is obvious? If the eye, EYE, is normally an inflammatory process and the ear a tumor process, then disease must be a tumor process in the eye and an inflammatory process in the ear, which is the opposite in each case. It is obvious, as it were, that it has to be this way. This may be a good opportunity to speak of these polar opposite processes of otitis, and especially otitis media. Otitis absolutely means that the etheric organization is gaining the upper hand in this local tract. This is evident not only from occult observation, but simply by looking at the end stage of otitis media, with the organs fusing and so on. Looking at the physical organism, one will then see that here the etheric body is getting excessively active. One has to know that in this tract, an overweening ether organization immediately causes the capital I organization to be enhanced in this tract, a process which goes down into the subconscious. So we have a physical development which should not be there, and which depends on the I organization. We can best deal with it by getting the breathing process active again. This is possible with medication, so that exhalation comes more alive, giving levisticum in suitable doses. This gets the breathing process, in the opposite sense to yesterday's reference to glaucoma development, moving. Breathing is more such that the strengthened breathing process goes inward, whilst it must go to the outside with the levisticum process. The strengthening of the breathing process thus goes more to the inside. And for otitis, strange as it may seem, eurythmy therapy will prove particularly helpful. It will be extraordinarily helpful to do L, M, S exercises. Everything relating to the ear is really only a localized process for a process in the whole human ether body. Because of this, we can influence everything that becomes localized in the ear by helping the breathing. We only help the breathing with this, in getting the patient to do the L, M, S exercises. Now, there are some other things I want to say. Now, there's a question from Dr. No Name. Eurythmy would no doubt have to be different for otitis and for sclerotic processes. Rudolf Steiner again. With sclerosis, one will above all practice eurythmy therapy based on vowels. With inflammatory processes, it has to be consonants, especially L, M, S, and such speech sounds. Other questions have been raised, and I'd like to consider them one after the other. The case asked about here, and we do already have some experience with it, is indeed particularly interesting. The question was, is it possible for treatment to be effective with arthritis deformans, which has persisted for years? Perhaps Dr. Palmer will be so kind as to give a brief review of our case in Stuttgart. And now Dr. Palmer speaks. This case, which we treated at that time with the treatment now general knowledge, was one of a fresh arthritis deformans. Mrs. X was treated for 4 or 5 weeks with phosphorus oil, 1%, and triturated stannum, 4 to 5%, and all her symptoms, previously treated at other clinics, disappeared. Apart from the medical treatment, the patient also had eurythmy therapy. We used the same treatment in the cases that came to our clinic, but did not, of course, have the same success as in this fresh case. A boy who had developed the condition in his 3rd/4th year was also treated with phosphorus oil and stannum, but we also had to give Levico water injections to enhance the effect. The boy was at a very acute inflammatory stage of arthritis in the hip, and in his case, too, all symptoms regressed, and he was completely free of pain. The damage to the joints and cartilage was, of course, already so severe that there was no question of restoring joint mobility. end of Dr. Palmer's overview, Steiner again. That is altogether the problem, of course. Let us now consider the two cases, for this can teach us a great deal. How old was our patient, Mrs. X? Dr. Palmer speaks. Perhaps in her late 20s, and the boy will have been 12 or 13. It was the American boy. Then a Dr. Kaser speaks, states that her patient is 27 and has had the condition from her 12th year. A second patient is 45, sick for 3 years, and one patient was about 70 years old. Dr. Steiner again. The question is, however, if you achieved a cure. Did you give the same treatment? Dr. Kaser again states that she had only now started to use it. Dr. Steiner again. The matter is extraordinarily important, because with this condition, enormously much depends on the kind of person we are dealing with. And we can indeed say that with arthritis deformans, it truly is the case that in a certain respect, we really have to individualize treatment in all cases, for the genesis of the condition relates greatly to the whole development of the person. In a condition which develops in the middle years, as in the case I first asked Dr. Palmer to interpret, you sometimes have to ask, does the cause lie far back in childhood, or did the causes only develop in later years? The peculiar thing is exactly that with the relevant bodily disposition, especially if there is a constitutional weakness of the etheric body, the cause of arthritis deformans lies in mental processes, especially in people who bring their astral body down into a weak etheric body on waking, so that because of the weakness in the etheric body, the astral body comes to be stronger than it really should be, is not sufficiently toned down as it enters into the etheric body. Pain, care, shocks, and consuming sorrow then truly act as the cause for the disease. The peculiar thing is this, however. If you have a child, let's take an ideal case, a child in his 10th year, and somehow, let us say, due to having had measles or the like, his etheric body is weakened, even if only for a time, the astral body is too powerful. At this time of life, I won't say 10 but 12 years, you'll see why in a minute. If the child has a grouchy teacher who gets him into states of all kinds so that he is at odds with himself, such a child's worries will be predominantly active at first. As the 14th year approaches, approximately, of course, 2 years will have passed from his 12th to 14th year, another 2 years take him to his 16th year, and in that 16th year, just as long after the end of the period following sexual maturity as the insult came before sexual maturity, there is a possibility of the business repeating itself rhythmically. Then it will not be new worry coming from outside, but the organic counter-image of those worries. Now the question is, how long does this process need after the periods which develop there to be thoroughly peripheral? At another period in the 21st year, that is in the 19th, 2 years before, and again 2 years later at age 23, the possibility for this child will again exist for the matter progressing. It just is a question as to how long this process needs to be thoroughly peripheral to appear as a deformation. Depending on circumstance, this may extend from the 12th year, where the first causes are, to the 30s, or indeed the early 40s. This is a very different picture than if someone, say, only comes up against the psychic cause after his 50th year or in the late 40s, when the experience may also come. In that case, these deformations come from a completely different depth in the organism. We are therefore able to say, let us assume we have a patient who is in his late 30s or early 40s, if you like, and suffers from severe arthritis deformans, an indication that the causes are really a long way back. On the basis of these facts, one might suggest the following treatment. I have construed an ideal case in response to your question, and it would now be a matter of provoking what has been the subject of our discussion here by means of arsenic injection and stannum and so on, by giving hydrogen sulfide baths, thus acting first of all on the neurosensory system, which always responds to such baths, thus taking hold of the peripheral human being from outside. If you then give high potencies of arnica, arnica tincture, or equisetum by mouth, both the same in this case, you are acting in the same direction from inside out, and you will probably get a cure, even with a long-established arthritis deformans. We can certainly say that this would be a case which might be treated in this way. Cases like the first one given by Dr. Palmer, where the cause definitely did not go back such a long way, might be treated with stannum and with phosphorus oil. I was pleased to mention this case because it is instructive to see from a condition just like this, though it goes very deep, how we must individualize. Third person remark now. A case is described where a woman had gone through something like this in her youth. In her 20s, she then had a gonorrheal infection, and immediately after this developed a very severe chronic arthritis. She is now about 45 and in a truly desolate state. Rudolf Steiner again. It is almost as if I had construed this case as an ideal one just now. Hydrogen sulfide baths and equisetum or arnica by mouth, or perhaps, if there is no immediate response, by injection. Question from Dr. Kaser again. The case to which you were referring is exactly that of the woman aged 27 who is my patient. You gave an accurate outline without knowing the case. Rudolf Steiner again. Here an interesting question arises. Diseases of the gastrointestinal tract due to shock. They may develop due to shock, but I think also due to other psychic influences, such as long-lasting worries or the like, constantly provided with more food. This will be the case especially with females. Very painful colicky states may develop. Lethargy of the whole gastrointestinal tract may also occur, or even complete failure, but a failure frequently also involving sensations of pain. Isn't that more or less the picture one gets? And there's an answer of yes. This is a very common condition, and it is highly interesting to observe what has really happened. In every one of these cases, the following has happened. The human astral body is a highly differentiated organism. And when you get to know this human astral body, you find it greatly adapts itself to the ether body for all organs that lie behind the sexual organs in the direction of the renal tract, their upper limits defined by the lung and heart tract. In this area, therefore, we may say, therefore, that the ether body sets the tone in this tract. The astral body adopts what the ether body does in its movements, its forms. It is very different in the sexual tract. The astral body is strongly active in the sexual tract, in some respect suppressing ether body activity. If a shock of this kind occurs here, the activity which the astral body develops in the sexual tract forces its way into the digestive tract, and we have a displacement of astral activity, with all the symptoms I mentioned. We need to initiate the process which will take the astral body to its proper place again in such a case. We must truly understand this situation, which really takes place wholly among the higher levels of existence in the human organism. Anything taking place in the physical body is merely a sequel, an outer symptom. The process is between ether body and astral body, partially so in that particular region of the body. You will always get a result with compresses of Einreibungen, special medicated rubs, with oxalic acid, simply oxalic acid, which is most easily obtained by expressing clover. You express clover and thus obtain oxalic acid. It is most effective and best used in Einreibungen, which are, again, special medicated rubs. It is extraordinarily powerful in energizing the etheric system in the digestive tract. The system develops especially powerful activity with this, and you must then try and get this astral sexual system, which has gone in there, to go back again. You get it to go back, either with a silver preparation, given in suitable dosage by mouth, or with a silver injection, using the fifth or sixth decimal. Silver, introduced into the circulatory and the digestive systems, always tends to restore deformation in the higher levels of the human organization. You see, if you use these two processes one after the other, you will get very good results, especially with the effects of shock. Shocks are extraordinarily interesting. And if you have brought about a cure for shock effects, when the kind of typical shock effect we have been describing is evident, you will be able to note the following as you continue to observe the patient. If you know how to put the right questions, the answers given by the patient will be, more or less, quote, "It is very odd indeed. From the time when I got well at that time, my heart seems completely different. When I hear something that gives a shock, cannon, shot, or the like, my heart feels as if it wanted to calm me, as if it was an entity which seeks to calm me down." Close quote. You see from this that polar opposite processes are indeed present with any regulatory intervention, not only those intended to heal in the human organism. This action of the heart, of which the patient was speaking, an action essentially in the etheric and the astral, is the polar opposite effect to what you are actually doing to restore the right relationship between sexual and digestive tract. This is what can be said with regard to this shock effect. Tomorrow I will go more into an interesting question concerning nervous disorders, especially spinal cord disorders, the first of the written questions, as it were. We'll meet again at 8:30 in the morning. Now I'd just like to say one more thing, as it really is highly topical, or at least I think so, and also noted in this list about incontinence in children, bedwetting. It does indeed appear to occur in a greatly increased form. With bedwetting in childhood, we are dealing with a typical weakness of the astral body. The astral body simply does not have the strength it should have. But if you use arsenic, also in the healthy form of Levico water or Ronsenio water, especially to treat bedwetting, you will, as a rule, get powerful but extraordinarily short-term activity, especially in bedwetters, through their total organization, a short movement of the astral body as appropriate for that body. The children will continue to wet their beds, but you will quite definitely get good results if you use the substance you obtain by expressing the leaves and flowers of St. John's wort, Hypericum perforatum. I don't know if you know that it is the only plant with stamens in three bundles. It is a member of Linnaeus's 18th class, has yellow petals and leaves that appear to have holes in them when seen against the light. Expressing this plant, you get a juice. Essentially, it is this bitter extracted principle found in the plant which matters, a substance which also acts powerfully and lastingly on the inner mobility of the astral body, making it strong. Recovery will be achieved in the right circumstances if one then also exerts a moral influence on the children, simply by telling them that they are obliged to pay attention to their functions. This moral influence should really be brought to bear exactly with things which, you know, are on the border between bad behavior and sickness. Please do not misunderstand me. I do, of course, know that it is a disease, but it is on the borderline between bad behavior and sickness. And we should not fail to pay attention to the moral will, which does indeed have considerable influence. If you cure such a thing in children, you can, of course, cure it with Hypericum, you weaken the children's will if you do not at the same time encourage them, giving them an impulse on the moral side. This would be what can be said about bedwetting. Tomorrow we'll talk about children with neuropathies, especially dementia praecox in various forms. Also some other issues, and I'll try and cover all these questions. And then there is a question from a doctor, no name, question as to the age of the plant juice. Dr. Steiner again. You should not let it be too old, but if you give it more or less by expressing it well, using a specific quantity, let us say a gram of leaf and flower, half and half, you will be able to add this to a glass of water, and you can then divide it into portions and use for half a year in this way. The end of Lecture 11.